right, everybody, welcome back. We have another episode of the Balance of Blues Brothers podcast. It's been a little bit since we were last recorded. We just had a lot of busyness and schedules and kind of technical difficulties in a couple areas. So we apologize to listeners for not having a regular content out, but we are looking forward to the future and expecting to have regular content coming out the rest of the way. So we do apologize for that. Just a lot going on behind the scenes with all of us. So but we're here to recap today. We have another win, three straight wins now for the Blues after yesterday's takedown 4-1 away to Burnley. And I think the big thing from yesterday's match was the tale of two halves. Early on in the first half really was kind of, I mean, yeah, the scoreline wasn't bad and it was a close match. But I think the thing to keep in mind is, you know, how much it looked at times like we were laboring and still in defensive transitions. There were a lot of weak moments there. But then, you know, you saw the second half. To me, the second half represented what this team can be. Now, I do want to temper my expectations and say that we are playing a little bit of an inferior competition with Burnley. But they're, you know, that's what we want to see, these chances being converted. You know, we now have Broya with you know, consecutive minutes, you know, getting more and more involved in the team. Jackson getting off the mark. But for me yesterday, I think if I'm going to highlight the big standout, to me, it has to be Cole Palmer. Consistently impressed with everything the young kid is doing. And not just with what he's doing, but the way in which he's doing it. He's such a young player, but looks so effortless on the ball. And is just making, for the most part, he's making a lot of simple decisions that are the right decisions from my perspective. So that's kind of where I would, you know, put this is the second half is maybe what I think we want to see and think we can see the rest of the way going forward. But we'll you know, there's a lot of game to be played as far as the season goes. So let's see if we how much momentum we can keep. But, you know, today for listeners, hey, we have the full cast here. We've got Travis. We've got Score, we've got Jordan, we've got Ola. So a lot to go through today, so I don't want to talk too much. I want to let everybody else get their ideas in on the match yesterday. I'll start with you, Score, and let you get your ideas and thoughts from yesterday's match. But, hey, this is the first time I think that there's really a lot of optimism. I know you've been kind of banging the optimism drum a lot on the podcast, and kind of that regression finally came to hit yesterday. So what are some of your thoughts and you know, from yesterday? Is this some of the things you've been expecting and thought we could have achieved all along?
Yeah. I literally just watched the whole 90 minutes back. The second half was, you're right. It was everything that I've been wanting to see. Like we've been creating chances in other games and not taking them. Yesterday, we actually took our chances. All the finishes were really good finishes, even the penalty. Cole Palmer, I agree with you. He's been absolutely incredible. I'm really impressed with him. In the first half, his work ethic was great. He was tracking back. He was, him and Conor Gallagher were kind of interchanging positions almost. He was coming inside when we went forward and Gallagher was going wide a little bit. But the penalty, that was a penalty we needed to score to go ahead, you know, and he's not scored for Chelsea, and he's a young player. So to take that penalty and score it showed a lot of character. I actually noticed this three times now this season we've come from behind to get a result in game. We did it yesterday. We did it against Liverpool. We did it against AFC Wimbledon. We could have done it against West Ham if we'd scored the penalty. There's a bit of character and some good team spirit showing there. This is quite a likable team in the sense of, not that they're nice guys, but just that you can enjoy watching them and you want them to succeed. You want them to do well. You can tell they're all giving everything every game, that they want to be successful. The second half, I don't know what Pochettino did at halftime, but we came out a different team. Raheem Sterling played well for the whole 90 minutes. He was brilliant yesterday. I think he won the penalty. He created the own goal. He was part of the fourth goal, and obviously he scored as well. And that was a great finish as well. It was a really clean finish. I've been wanting to see that for a long time from him. That's the kind of finish that we need. And then Jackson, I was impressed with his finish because, you know, he's still young, still developing, but and that wasn't an easy finish necessarily. And but the way he maneuvered himself into position and scored that goal was really impressive. And it's good for confidence. We're a young side, so we're going to be a bit inconsistent. And I was expecting that. But our data's always been good. We've literally won every game, every Premier League game we've won on expected goals this season. Like, well, I think it's, how many games have we played? Eight? Is it eight now, I think? Eight or nine goals, games, and we won them all on expected goals.
I think nine total matches.
We've won them all on expected goals, which is pretty incredible, really. But we, yeah, and even yesterday we created more chances than we actually scored. So, yeah, what you said is right. Like, yes, second half yesterday was really what I've been waiting to see. And it had the finishing to go with it. That's the most important thing. We weren't finishing our chances in the early games. We weren't taking enough. We were having the opportunities to score goals and not taking them. Yesterday we took them. And that's good. That's good for confidence. It's good for the player development. It's good for momentum, and obviously gets points on the board, which is what we need. So I'm still feeling really positive, you know, and like I think people were worried we were gonna be on about, I don't know, 12 points at Christmas or something like that. But I don't think that's gonna be the case. I mean, I don't want to get too carried away because we'll still have some setbacks, I think. And we'll still have some difficult results and bad performances because this is a young team and I don't expect consistency quite yet. But the trajectory is positive. Like, the underlying data continues to be positive for the team. And Reece James is coming back for the next game. Kylie Chocomenko is coming back. And obviously Broach is now making his way back, and it was good that he scored the other day. I really like him as a player. He still needs a few. He's still got to improve. He's still a young player, but I've always liked him. And yeah, so we're kind of making progress. It's just slow, steady progress. As long as we don't raise our expectations too high for this season, I think we'll be okay. We're kind of, 6 points off. We're 6 points behind the top four. And I think we're about 4 or 5 points behind fifth or sixth. So the gap isn't too far away, right? And if you're thinking about finishing sixth, for example, the gap isn't that big. And if we can keep the gap at that big or close it, make it smaller, climb the table a bit, that would be really positive, because then we're in a position where we can get into European football for next season, which is what we want. Whether it's Champions League or Europa League or even Conference League, like, at this point, it almost doesn't matter. As long as getting European football next year would be a real positive, so, and a sign of our development. So, yeah, I mean, I enjoyed watching a second half. I did. Like, Conor Gallagher was excellent again. Every game he impresses me. Like, he's definitely, I don't know what anyone says, he's improved this season for sure. And he's stepping up as well, taking responsibility, wearing the armband. You know, he's definitely. I looked at his data today and it's really, really impressive for this season. I've always liked Conor Gallagher, and I just love everything about him. And Jordan and I have been on about him for ages. So, but yeah, it's good to see him do well. That midfield three looks really, really good, really solid. They look to kind of complement each other and play off each other pretty well. Caicedo has been quietly effective, which is what a DM needs to be. Like, I'm pleased with him, you know, and we will get better. We will get better. But to come from behind, away from home, you know, to win like that is good. We wouldn't have won that game. We'd have lost that game last season. We wouldn't have come back because the mentality wasn't there. The work ethic wasn't there. The desire wasn't there. You know, maybe even the quality wasn't there, you could argue. But, you know, this team's developing some character, and really clear that they're together and that they're fighting for each other and they're fighting for the manager. And that's what you need to see. So, yeah, another positive step forward, I think.
I would say that, like, I agree. I think there's been a few players that have identified themselves as undroppable at this point. to me, one of them for right now, and I'm not saying undroppable for the whole season, but for right now, I think Connor Gallagher has shown that he is one of those players. I think that there are a few others. Axel Disasi has been absolutely incredible. And I mean, I don't need to rant off the stats about how he's arguably been the best ball progressing center back when it comes to passing in the Premier League this season. He is the most aerial dominant center back in the Premier League this season. And he was brilliant yesterday. And I saw people blaming him for the goal. And not that I want to get sued for slander or anything, although I think it's coming sooner than later. That goal, Axel Disasi was the only one in position. Right? There's one key problem with that goal, and it's the same problem for pretty much every goal we've seen this season, which is Thiago Silva was too far up the pitch and could not recover. And because of that, Levi Colwell was also very far up the pitch and did eventually recover, but it took him too long. So Disasi was covering for two players. Cucurella did not get tight enough on his man. I think that's largely because Cucurella has not played right back before. And when you're defending at a different angle, getting too tight could result in you getting beat. And so I think Cucurella was doing it so he didn't get beat. And we gave up a goal. And I think, I don't understand why people blame Disasi. I think if you watch the play, honestly, he was covering for two players. He was in about as good position as you can get. And like, could he have gone up and pressed the Burnley's attack? Like, theoretically, yeah, but then there's nobody covering behind him. So all it takes is Cucurella's man running, making like not even a third man, right? Just making a run. And that's a goal. So I really think Disasi, outside of like the first match where I think he did struggle a little bit against Liverpool, has been pretty much perfect every time he's gone out. Not that I think he's undroppable, but I do think that Sterling, Palmer together, Sterling on the left, Palmer on the right, is about as good of a wing combination as we could get right now. And when Nkunku gets healthy, that may change. It may not. But I think on the wings, those two complemented each other really well. I mean, I kept seeing Sterling, like, talks that, oh, Sterling was playing as a wide forward, and he wasn't. Like, Sterling was receiving that ball wide. He was then taking on his man and cutting in. He was key for ball progression. He was not playing in the Mane role. Like, Sterling was playing as an out-and-out winger who was direct once he received the ball. And Palmer's a wide playmaker, and I think one could argue that we had that with Ziyech, but for other reasons, Ziyech didn't work. We don't need to get into those, but I was worried this season that we wouldn't have a wide playmaker. Like I was worried last season we didn't have one because Silva was barely playing, or not Silva, yeah. Ziyech was barely playing. And Cole Palmer had this, like, that
wide playmaker, you know, concern for how many years? Like, it's
since I remember my first episode with you guys on this podcast, and I said that we need a wide playmaker. And that was, I think, Tuchel's second season. So, and it's been since Hazard left, really. So, yeah, I think Cole Palmer kind of serves that purpose. So I think those, really the only one who I think is, only two I think have shown they are undroppable right now are Gallagher and Disasi. But I think as units, we're starting to get an idea of what our best units look like, what our best defensive line looks like, what our best midfield unit looks like, and what our best attacking unit looks like. And I think that's really good. So I'm really happy. I think the schedule's about to get a lot tougher. I think we're going to have a lot of world-ending tweets from Chelsea fans when, like, we inevitably have a bad result against Arsenal, City, Newcastle, Man U, like one of these big teams. Like, it's what happens. It happens to every team. And I think we've had an easy schedule. And it's going to get harder and results are going to be mixed, but I'm trying to be as positive as I can, largely to like take influence from Score here, which is, I really think like there's reason to be positive about the long-term future of this squad. So I'm happy.
Yeah. I think we are at the risk of should I say overanalyzing the Burnley game. And I say this because I don't think we played as well as it seems. Because for me, we took 8 shots against Burnley. 8 shots. And Burnley took more shots than us. And granted, those are shots. I think it's maybe not indicative, but I think Burnley played as big a role in our success as we did. I don't think we're that great. I don't think... I don't mean to be that guy, but I don't think Palmer was that good. I also don't think Sterling was... I think Sterling was our best player on the day. I think he had a hand in all 4 goals. He drove the ball from the halfway line to set up the goal that Jackson eventually scored. It was his cross that was turned in for an own goal. He scored, and he won the penalty that Palmer took. I think Sterling himself didn't have as good a game as what I just said suggests, but he was quite effective for us. And I think generally Burnley shot themselves in the foot. For instance, I think the own goal they considered probably had more of an effect on them that maybe it won't have on another team. I am not going out of my way to discredit a very good performance. We did score 4 goals from 1.9 XG and took 8 shots and scored 4 goals from 8 shots. That suggests that we're extremely clinical. And that is not going to be the case in many matches. We're going into a tough run of fixtures, and I think that would be... There will be a lot more to take from those games than from this Burnley one. Burnley is where they are for a reason. And even against Fulham, I think Fulham also left quite a lot of space with their non-pressing that they were doing, which... You still have to play well to beat these teams. Same goes for Burnley. But I think I don't think the Burnley game is an indication of what Pochettino is cooking. I don't think it is an indication that we are finally that everything is finally clicking. I think the defense was not great. I think Kowe wasn't that good. I think I agree with Jordan that Axel Disasi was our best defender on the night. As for the Thiago Silva thing, I understand why fans are very defensive of him. He has played well in many, many matches. But the thing with centre-back is what you are doing is as important as what you are not doing. Because it's a reactive position. You are reacting to what's going on. If you are not making a clearance, it may be because you are not there to make the clearance. And if you are not there to make the clearance, that's not good. So if you are not there, someone else makes that clearance, or someone else is in the position to make a clearance, and maybe he gets dribbled past and we concede, and eventually that person is going to be blamed. But that is... That's the cost of last man defending. Disasi has been playing that role since, I think, Liverpool. Or maybe not Liverpool. I think it was West Ham, actually. But I noticed, because Cowell is playing left back, and he's not a left back, Thiago Silva is playing, he can't get back, we're playing a high line. Someone has to be on cover duty of some sort. The problem is, in a back two, when that situation is happening several times, I think you find yourself in a situation where better teams find ways to exploit problems that they see. And Levi Cole, I don't think he has the recovery pace to get back if he gets caught high up the pitch. Thiago Silva definitely doesn't have the recovery pace. So we have maybe Malo Gusto, and who also plays quite high and also by design. So you have Disasi having to play cover and be on cover again. And what that means is Disasi is good enough to be on cover, but what that also means is whenever he gets his left high and dry, he's going to be the one to get the blame. And I don't like that. I think generally we played well against Burnley, considering that we won 4-1. But I think taking a step back and looking at it from the beginning and looking at it from taking a closer look at it, I don't think we played as well as perhaps we should have against Burnley. And I think when we play against much better opposition, we probably don't have as much luck as we did against Burnley. Because I'm not saying we're down to luck. I don't want to be misinterpreted. But I think Burnley definitely helped us out in how the game played out. I think they were quite bad. I think they made mistakes that they probably shouldn't have. I think they missed some chances to create some very good opportunities. But ultimately, we were clinical, and we can't rely on being clinical. We can't rely on 4 goals out of 8 shots in every game. I think we need to create more chances. I think we need to create better chances, and we didn't do that against Burnley. Whether we do that against better opposition from after the international break is yet to be seen. But I think it's important for us to... It's important for us to be measured in the evaluation of them, of high margin wins like this, to be sure that we're not reading too much into it.
No, I think that's a very balanced opinion there, Olad, that we probably will need a higher shot volume. We probably will need more than just moments from Sterling. We'll probably need more overall to compete against the big dogs. So I do agree with you there. Travis, it's been a long-awaited return for you. I know you've been busy with everything. So, what's your thoughts from yesterday as well as the season up to date so far?
Yeah. So, like Score, I've been more optimistic about the team simply because, to me, it seems like we were doing literally everything except score, and it was almost like we were cursed not to score, and. The only time I really started to get a little shaken with that was this first half against Burnley. That first half was bad. And even though Burnley's really only chance was when the entire defense made individual mistakes, besides Disasi, really, he didn't really make a mistake. He did what he's supposed to do. But the other three defenders made a mistake and it led to the goal. We didn't really do anything in that first half to look like we were going to score or really anything at all. And then just a happenstance like it used to be last season or the season before, where we concede over just this silly run of events. And then we came out in the second half and everything was great. Sterling is much closer to the player we thought we were getting now than he's ever been. Palmer was not even a player on anyone's radar when the summer started, and he's one of our best signings, if not the best one. And that's only because, Caicedo doesn't have much to do. Caicedo being anonymous, that's a good sign for him. Jackson, the goal he scored was not a goal we would have scored in the last several years. The composure to do everything he had to do to put it in the net. And he was right in front of it. But we've seen time and time again, our players will mess that up somewhere in the process. And Jackson he got it right. So I think overall, there's a lot of positives to take from the game, mainly that we do seem to be finally turning all these underlying stats of possession and chances and everything, we're finally turning that into actual results again, just as we're getting our players fit that have been out this whole time. And now we're almost running into a new question of, but when Nkuku does get fit, who drops for him? Because to me, that midfield three, that front three that we played against Burnley, though, that's it. That's who I'd stick with. But you got to put Nkuku in somewhere, so who's coming out for him? The back line is where my main issue is, just because they always seem to have that one mistake. And there's one player that I know we agree is maybe most at fault for that. But there's a lot of other Chelsea fans that are trying to ignore that someone's time has come. And there's also conversations about the goalkeeper. You know, like I've seen people suggest Sanchez should be dropped. Like, I don't really think Sanchez has done a whole lot wrong, honestly. You know, he's not a world-class keeper, and that's fine. I'd say 9 out of 10 teams, probably more than that, don't have a world-class keeper. You know, we had one in Courtois, we had one in Czech for, you know, 15 years between the two of them. But most teams just don't have a world-class keeper. I'd argue City don't have a world-class keeper, but that doesn't stop them.
Sorry, Ederson is – don't get me started on Ederson. He is not that good of a goalkeeper. I won't stop you anymore, but, yeah, I have to chime in on that because I don't get how he gets called a world-class keeper. He is just simply
– because he can set up a lawn chair for most matches and not do anything, and everyone looks, oh, he's got clean sheets. Great. And he passes well. But, you know, if you actually take shots at him, he crumbles. It's not hard. And, yeah, I mean, like, at this point, I think it's just maintaining what we're building. And, you know, the numbers are there. The underlying stats are there to turn into real points. And, yeah, we've got a terrible run of games coming up, and that's fine. But I'm not really worried about it because, like, most of the stats say we can hang right up there with Arsenal and City and play chess or whatever the new topic on Twitter is. I mean, it's really poker. Let's be real. But yeah, I mean, like the only thing I really think we need to figure out is this defense and this whole like back three, but it's really a back four, but it's also kind of a back three thing. Like, I think it's a good idea. But is it the idea we need to cover for certain players that we have back there? And I'm not so sure of that. And that's really the big question to answer going forward, besides, you know, where are we going to put in Cuckoo when he's fit?
I also want to chime in because I think, so I agree with basically, actually, I agree with everything you said, Travis, there, like 100% of what you said. And I think the Nkunku point raises a question that is less of a problem when we're playing in Europe in multiple cup competitions, because then you have to rotate. Like, I don't care what Arteta says, like, about, like, oh, well, you don't rotate out your best players. Like, pretty much every manager does. Now, sometimes that rotation means they're going to come off the bench, right? And they'll still play every match. Like, that's kind of what Klopp will do with Salah a lot, is that in matches Salah doesn't play, he'll still come on in the 60th minute, or the matches he doesn't start. But, like, so I think it's less of a problem when we're playing a lot of matches. This season, I think it's more of a problem. I don't know who you bench for Nkunku right now. I think the good news is we don't need to worry about that for a minute. But I think somebody like Mudryk, for example, right? Like, well, how are you getting Mudryk minutes? I think that's a fair question because Mudryk looked really good against Fulham. Other than that, this season, Mudryk has been shaky at best, and Sterling, I think, has been pretty consistently our best attacker, or at least our most consistent attacker. But, like, that's on Poch, and, like, I think, like, that is a lot of man management stuff, right? Mourinho and Carlo are the two best at that in the world, I think. Right? And, like, Carlo, even this year, we're hearing noise out of Real Madrid, like, oh, Kroos and Modric are pissed about this new formation. But then Kroos and Modric start two straight matches, or Kroos does at least, and all of a sudden those cries stopped. So I think, like, it's just going to be part of that rotation. But, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to worry too much about Nkunku right now. I do think he is the best player on the team, or at least when he was healthy, or best attacker on the team. So he's going to play. I don't know where. But, yeah, the Burnley match to me is exciting because it also shows what we can do in defense is give us space. Fulham 2, Liverpool before that. And like Arsenal and City are going to give us space. So I expect us to play very, like, I think what we've seen last two matches where you're averaging anywhere between 40 to 55% possession, but not much more than that, and set up in a mid block that does have like an initial high press and then it becomes a very solid mid block that opens up space to counter. I think That's what we're going to see. It's what we saw against Liverpool, and I think it'll work pretty well, at least in attack. I don't know. Like, the young team, we're probably not going to finish all the chances we get. Just the reality. But, yeah, I'm not... I think out of all of us, I may have had the lowest expectations for what I would consider a good season going into this season. I don't think we need to get into a European spot for it to be a good season. And so to that end, like, I'm not upset with much yet. I think there was a few weeks there where my fears about Poch before we signed him were rearing their ugly heads. And I think it's still kind of in the background, but our players are improving. He was brought in to improve our players. So I can't complain too much.
Well, yeah, and I was just going to say, we're starting to have good problems. Like, good problems as in, who do we drop for Nkunku when he's fit, right? Good problems, like having Badia Shield back, you know, and, you know, if you want to play with a full left, proper left back, then you've got three really good centre-backs at two positions, or you can play all three of them together. But Badia Shield coming back helps. And you're going to be about to have Gusto and Reece James both available as well, like from the next game. I'd rather have a team with good problems like that than have bad problems, which is we don't have anyone to play this position. We can't, you know, we don't have anyone who's good enough. We can't, you know, whatever. Like, problems, bad problems are what we've had before. I mean, good problems are what good sides have. And then it's up to the manager to make those calls. That's what a top manager does. So, you know, like, because you can't change our midfield at the moment. I don't think you want to change our attack. I think there's one change you can make to our defence, which we all know, as soon as Badia Shield is fit again. I'm not sure if he'll be 100% match fit for Arsenal, but certainly after that, I think he will be. And he'll probably play against Blackburn, I suspect, but hopefully he'll play against Brentford before that. So, yeah, it's good to have good problems. I mean, Carney Chukwuemeka coming back when Conor Gallagher was playing so well. That's a good problem because I thought he was brilliant until he got injured. And we missed him, you know, for a while. So that's another good problem. I like to have good problems. When you can't decide, when you've got to leave players out who you maybe should be starting, that's a good problem to have. The good thing we have this season is that young players and I think they're more able to kind of accept not starting every game. Then when you're kind of when there's someone like Raheem Sterling, you expect him to start almost every game, right? So because his track record, right? You know, he's played nearly 100 games for England. He's been brilliant at Manchester City and Liverpool. You know, he's in his prime in terms of his age, anyway. And so he will expect to start when he's fit. So it's good to have those good problems. But yeah, I think we just need to kind of temper expectations and just, like, as long as we're seeing progress in the team and seeing the players developing, which we are, I think we're going to be okay. I mean, all these people that were talking about relegation, you know, just absurd. But yeah, that's what I wanted to say, really. So go for it.
Yeah, I one thing I wanted to capitalize on here is, you know, that we've had this, I think it's really important to talk about this because we've had this theme of not just even this season, it goes back to previous seasons of very good, you know, expected goals performances. And that's a lot like what Score was alluding to is that we've won every game on expected goals. And we finally sort of saw the regression hit on that. If you're following along there. And what I mean by that is, you know, there's this idea in sports regression to the mean. It's always going to happen, right? If you're over exceeding, you're going to regress to the mean. If you're under exceeding, you're going to regress to the mean. And it's sure, it's kind of true in both the short term and the long term that this regression to the mean phenomena happens. And I guess what I want to explore here is this idea of we had a lot of good XG and overall chance creation, but little goals being scored. Do we think that yesterday is a sign of regression to the positive regression to the mean, right? Getting back to where the XG would predict us to be. And because I think tactically, Ola hit on a good point. We only had 8 shots created, but we had 4 goals. Now, I haven't actually looked at the XG from yesterday, but if I had to guess, it was, I mean, it had to have been around 2, right? At least 2, 3. 1.8-ish is what Travis said. So around 2, right? So we overexceeded, right? XG, and by basically, you know, scoring more than we would have, you know, been expected to score, we had a regression of the mean in a positive way, right? Whereas previously in other matches, it was the opposite, creating more than we scored, negative regression. So I guess my question is, do you think yesterday is really a turning? I don't want to even say turning point. I just want to say, is yesterday a sign that we're going to be able to more closely hit the XG going forward, especially because we all know the schedule is going to be coming up soon? Or do you think that it's just a fluke? Because I think the fact that we've now, and look, you guys have all heard me on this podcast, so you know how I feel about this. Up to this point. But I think that the fact, and this is going against what I've said previously, that it's going to be a bad thing as we get to close, you know, to better teams. The closer we get to them, we're going to have reduced numbers and it's going to make results worse. Well, I now want to ask, can this XG, now that we've had it over, we've won XG on what, 9 consecutive games? I don't think that people realize how impressive that is. And I'm the biggest guy. You see me on the Twitter timeline and all that. I'm sitting there saying, well, it's a good thing we don't win games on XG, right? So I am well aware of the flaws of getting too caught up ahead of XGs. It's not actually an objective of the game. But I think that when you see a long-term trend of 9 consecutive games won on XG, that is a key red, I want to say red flag, but in a good way, that this team is performing. They're just not getting the results in prior matches to you know, support that. But now that we've won XG on every match, is this something that we're going to continue to point to as a potential, you know, positive thing when we start coming up against these juggernauts here soon? Or are we still more in the camp that we need to temper our expectations based upon 9 straight XG wins because of the fact that we're facing potentially perceived lower competition?
I'd argue it's the lower competition we struggled with, though. Like, even in our bad spells in recent years, it always seems like we're playing Liverpool right after a bad spell. And then we always turn up against them. We don't really win, but we at least turn up. And, like,
our best XG match last year, wasn't it Bruno's game against Liverpool?
I'm pretty sure it was. And, like, I was at least one of the top ones. Yeah, I was just looking over the shots. Like, we're talking about 8 shots against Burnley, but that's the fewest shots it looks like we've taken in a Premier League game this season. And, I mean, we obviously converted them. We converted those shots, which is great, but that's what we've been missing before. Before, we've been doing, like, 15-plus shots to not score but once if we're lucky. And, you know, now it's, you know, every other shot. So I don't know if that's just we're more patient about which ones we're actually taking or what's going on. But in general, like, we're talking about, you know, all these big teams coming up that we play against, but, like, it's the big teams we tend to do the best against because we can find space through. And, you know, I'd argue a lot of our chances against Burnley came because we were able to find space, or even against Fulham, because they were two teams willing to, like, open themselves up a little bit, and we played through them instead of having to, like, break them open. But more than anything, I think it's just we're finally getting some consistency in the lineup. You know, I don't have time to look this over, but it feels like this is one of the first times we've had, like, a consistent attack in a while this season. And I was just glancing at all the formations we've played this season. You know, we've gone from 3-4-3, 3-4-2-1, 3-4-1-2, 4-2-3-1, 4-3-3. Like, we've done all kinds of shapes to put in players because we've had these injuries, because we've had everything going on. And, like, now we're finally getting some sort of consistency with who we have available, with how we can shape up. And you're seeing those partnerships develop more and more, you know, like, Sterling, Jackson, Palmer, like, they really click with each other in ways we haven't really had for a while. you know, probably since like Tammy Abraham was leading the line with Mount one side of him. And, you know, like the more we can be consistent, the more we can not worry about like how many injuries we're going to have this week, that helps. And we don't have to keep like doing these makeshift back lines of like an inverted fullback or whatever it is we're doing. And over time, that should result in more goals just because players understand each other better. You know, Sterling's been playing with Jackson. He gets how Jackson's going to move and hold the line. Palmer's the other side getting the same thing. You know, Enzo and Caicedo are finally getting to play with one another like we had planned. And, you know, they're developing their partnerships. And, you know, just over time, it's only going to get better in my mind because of that, so long as we don't have another injury crisis. And like I said, like these bigger games that are more open, you know, we're not really the kind of team that does the whole Arsenal City chess match thing anymore. You know, we don't have that capacity. We can't hold a line and defend the whole game. But, you know, we can counter and attack still. And, you know, maybe that's what we need to do. Like, we'll figure out how to break these smaller teams down later. I mean, Jose took a season to do it when he came back last time. You know, maybe Poch just needs to figure out the same thing. Like, how are you going to break down teams that just aren't open for you when you have players that, you know, they just desperately want to just get it forward and into the net?
I'd also point out that our worst player this year has been, I mean, in my opinion, anyways, has been the oldest player in the squad, the veteran. Like, and I'm not trying to like get, again, like, I don't want to
get the lawsuit on here.
Yeah, I don't want to get sued for slander, but like, he is, I mean,
Bell Silva is going to personally shout us out on Twitter as negativity. Hey, and I'm going to love just raking the thousand followers from her.
Exactly. Calling us like, out. It means more followers. Or maybe if we're lucky, Thiago Silva will go at us on Instagram, be like, yeah. Anyways, like,
well, if he's gonna go at us, maybe he should go in for a tackle and not do this Limp Bizkit nonsense he did yesterday. You know, like that goal could have been stopped if he put in anything into that tackle, and instead he like gave a little shove, like a little shove, and then it was done.
Yeah, I mean, Silva's consistently been the one guy in every match that's made an error. In every match we've given up a goal. He's also, I saw some stat that he takes more time on the ball than any other player on our team, which like from the eye test matches. So I agree. I am like king of the data says young players are much more inconsistent, not just from week to week, but within matches. I think that's true. I think that's why the first half against Burnley may have been the worst half of football we've played all season. And the second half we look incredible. That's gonna happen. People who are like, well, if we lose, so we've played 8 matches in the Premier League so far, if we lose 5 out of our next 10, it's a nightmare of a season. Well, no, because that's when we've played half the league, and then we can really see where the data is, right? Are we still winning on XG and not getting results? Because after 18 matches, that's a great sign. Right, that is like Liverpool the past few years where they've rebounded in the second half of the season, but their XG is more or less remained consistent throughout. I don't like, I guess I never thought we were going to really push for Champions League this year. And it's not because I don't rate the team. It's just, it's a young team with a manager who, in his own words, needs to develop more. Right. So this was always going to be a process this year. And like, I think Poch has messed up a bit across the course of the season. I think, and we talked about this in our group chat, and I think it was Travis brought up like Thiago Silva may be getting these minutes because of like politics and he is considered a leader. He's the oldest one on the team. You don't want to piss him off. And like, I think that's perfectly fair. I think when Badiashile is healthy, I would be skeptical that Silva continues to start. And we're going to see that. I mean, it looks very plausible that the Arsenal match, we're going to have Reece James back. And by City, we will have Badiashile and Reece James back. So Once that defensive line is healthy, then I'm fascinated. And Sterling and Jackson, like, not that you know a lot from Instagram, but I think players' Instagram posts show us more than some people think they do. Those two are liking each other's and commenting on each other's and resharing each other's Instagram stories every day. DeSasi is doing it with literally every player. So I think you're starting to see new leaders come to light. And as Travis pointed out, partnerships being formed. So again, it's Burnley and it's Fulham. Like, I'm trying not to get overexcited, but I think it does confirm a lot of what I thought before the season, which is it's a process and there will be good and bad parts. And let's enjoy the good parts when they're here.
I should mention that we have played well in many games this season and didn't get anything out of it too. I guess in a way we're due some overperformance of some sort. I agree that Pochettino is a good coach and we have very good players, and given enough time, they will eventually get, Poch will eventually get a coherent team going. I don't know how long it will take. I don't know what exactly it is we'll be producing, creation-wise, goal-scoring-wise. I don't know the height Pochettino can take this team to, but I know that we won't be getting 1 point per game forever. And I know that as he's only coached, what, ten games as Chelsea manager. So he's still instilling a lot into this team in terms of his playing style and the values he wants this team to have. So I'm not overly bothered, but I did mention some weeks ago that there are some things that, you know, we look out for and we see how they improve over the season because we expect them to improve. And I would admit that our defense has not been poor, though it's a bit strange when we have, well, we do have three clean sheets, so that's not it. But our defense has generally been good. The attack hasn't been good, but we've been creating the big chances. And if we continue to create big chances, we'll definitely get goals. I think we're conceding just about what we're expected to concede, which is good. I mean, we probably want to overperform our expected goals against, but it's not the end of the world if we perform exactly at our expected goals against. But yeah, I think given enough time, Pochettino is going to start winning more games, scoring more goals, being more comfortable in games, because I don't think we're as comfortable in games as the possession numbers suggest right now. I think because of how we've set up the back line, it is sometimes fairly relatively easy to play through us. For a team that has 78% or 70%, 66% possession, it sounds strange, and maybe I'm not saying it well, but I think sometimes it's just a bit easy to get through us. But I expect all that to improve with time. There are positive signs. The underlying numbers are very good. And while the underlying numbers don't equate to points, they are trends and they are indicators that the team is moving in the right direction. So I have full faith in Poch, and I believe that as the more time he has with the team on the training ground in competitive matches, the better we are going to get. And it's definitely showing.
Yeah, I think I'll give us a couple of thoughts on this, and then, you know, just kind of open up for some, you know, closing remarks from here. I'm looking forward to the next match. But I think the key thing is that if we're going to have any level of consistency against these upper level sides that we're about to face more, you know, sooner rather than later, then we're going to absolutely have to, you know, continue these XG and chance creation and just overall play metrics. But the defensively, things will have to improve. Otherwise, we talked about this earlier. We don't have a world-class goalkeeper, so we can't have these defensive liabilities as much because we're going to be punished. We don't have a goalkeeper that can bail out defensive liabilities. We have a solid, and I mean, starting level keeper. I still am on the side. I don't think Sanchez is a great goalkeeper, but I don't think he's bad. maybe my opinions on him being bad have been reversed a little bit as of late, right? So maybe I'll kind of take a little bit of that back on that side of things. But I just think that we have got to recognize that, you know, it's going to be tougher against these bigger teams. And because it's going to be tougher against those bigger teams, I wonder how sustainable these trends are. It's just, to me, I think that really the answer, and a lot of people might hate to hear this, is it kind of depends. It's kind of in the middle. It's not a definitive answer. I think that some of this XG stuff is going to, in chance creation, I think some of these overall key metrics that we look for are going to decline against these better teams. But I think that I'm hoping that with consistency, you know, in defensive, you know, what's the word here, substitutions or changes. Yeah, and I think anybody knows that what I'm alluding to there if they've listened to this show or anything like that and know me. If we can get those changes and then therefore have a better defense, even if we're not creating as much and having as many scoring opportunities, that is going to lower or at least keep the delta between scoring opportunities and defensive liabilities more or less equal, right? So I think to me that's an easy way how I envision, you know, basically get Body of Shield back, take Silva out. Maybe we have less overall creation against these better teams. We have more defensive solidity. We can play a higher press, therefore reduces the number of chances against us, which reduces the number of chances that we need to create to be able to win or get a point out of the match. So I think there's two ways to combat that potential regression in XG is either we can maintain it or we can do things on the defensive end to make up for that drop in that metric, right? Because it's going to drop. I think it's going to happen against these better teams. And I think that we're at the time, and everybody on this podcast seems to agree, right, that it's probably the end of Thiago Silva. And that's no problem. He's been good for us. He's had a very good career. I mean, he's had an exceptional career. And even for Chelsea, he's had a good career. So if we have to say goodbye, that's okay. We can do that. That's okay. We've said goodbye to better, bigger players than Silva, and we probably will sometime in the future do it as well. And that's just the way that life, sports, everything is, right? Succession is inevitable. So I think that's where I'll let you guys get some final comments if you have any on the match and looking forward, and then we'll kind of just wrap up and look forward to the next match.
Yeah, I think like you say, there's a lot of positives. There also needs to be some balance because balance in both areas, because we haven't had our fully fit squad yet. We haven't had a fully fit squad available to Pochettino yet. And we've been missing two world-class players in Reece James and Kunku. But at the same time, on the other hand, you know, we haven't played like the likes of Manchester City, Arsenal, yet. We haven't played like the really kind of top teams. Yeah, we played Aston Villa, who are a good team. We played Liverpool, who are doing very well this season. Although we didn't think they were that good when we played them, but turns out they're having a good season. And also Brighton as well. I know Brighton haven't been great in the last few weeks, but they're still sixth in the Premier League, and you know, still a very good side. And they didn't really have a chance against us, right? So there are some positives, but we've got, like I've been saying all along, we have to accept we're going to be inconsistent and we're going to lose some games. And we probably will lose to Manchester City. And, you know, we might get something out of Arsenal if we're lucky, but these are going to be difficult games. And we might play well in those games and still lose because they're good teams. That's what can happen. You can play really, we could play well in all of those games and just not get anything from them. But it just depends. So we're going to be the underdogs in those games, which probably helps us because the expectations won't be as high from outside anyway. Maybe from our own fans they might be, but certainly from the outside, Arsenal will be favourite, Man City will be favourite, even Spurs will probably be favourite when we play them. So that'll probably help us, take a bit of pressure off us, and we'll just have to see what happens. I think we'll get something out of some of these games unexpectedly. but I can't tell you which game it will be or which games it will be, because that's the nature of having a young team. You don't know when they're what's going to happen. But yeah, we've had a solid start. I think we'll keep improving, but just don't raise expectations too high too quickly. I think that's what I said all along, and I continue to say that.
Yeah, I mean, I am pretty happy with where the team's at. As I said a few weeks ago, not to get overexcited by Fulham and Burnley, right? There are matches that are matches that we should win, but we won them. And that is something that even during the first part of this season so far, we weren't doing. So I think that's improvement. I'll also just say, like, people are going to be pissed. It's going to happen. One of these teams, like, just the reality, Man City or Arsenal or one of these teams is going to beat us 3-0 or 3-1, right? Like, it's what happens. These teams are great teams, and fans are going to riot. And it's just important to keep in perspective. Like, Man City, the core of that squad has been together for years, right? Arsenal, that squad, outside of like a few of their important players are new, but a lot, like Martinelli, the Gabriel, right? Like, these guys have all been together for Ben White. Like, they've been together for years. So they're going to just have chemistry that we won't. Now, with that said, I think Badiashile and De Sassi have good chemistry. I know Ola and I were talking a few nights ago about this, and I was watching old, like, highlights from some of their old matches. Like, I watched the Nice, the Reims, and then PSG. And they have chemistry, right? Those two have chemistry together. So it's the other reason why I don't think De Sassi is getting benched. And I do think Badiashile is coming right back into the team when he's ready to go. We saw Reece had chemistry with Sterling. Sterling may be on the opposite side now, but I imagine that Caldwell and Sterling will develop chemistry, just like I imagine Reece will develop chemistry with Palmer. So it's going to take time. One of these matches, we're going to get blown out. The world is not ending. These first matches overall are much better than how he looked the second half of the last season. So I think at that point, it's tough for me to argue that things are awful and everything. Like, I'm not as excited as many. I also am pretty level-headed about how I feel like this season will have some bad results, some amazing results. And I think we probably finish 8th to 12th and probably closer to the high end of that. And I'm great with that. That, to me, as long as we keep seeing players improve, is what I want to see.
Guys, flipping through Brave New World here, because like the whole beginning of Brave New World is about how awful that season was at the beginning for Spurs. And it wasn't as bad as this season has started. But I mean, by the end of that season, Spurs had made 86 points, which until Manchester City was good for the title most years. So I'm not saying like everything's going to be exactly as it was before, but you know, even though things are like a little rough, I think there's been plenty to go on to say that, you know, it's not as bad as it looks. You know, like we're hitting like puberty as a team right now, and it's bad and it's awful, but like on the other end of it, it's going to be real good. You know, like on the other end of it, we're turning into Brad Pitt. And we just got to weather that whole like stage of like the squeaky voice and the pimples and, you know, all of that. And then we'll get there. And like, I don't know another way to put it besides that. Yeah, I mean, not to talk about the actual Brave New World book, but like, it is. It's like something completely different for us as Chelsea fans. Like, you know, most of us have only known Chelsea to be good. Even in bad seasons, we were good. And like, we've never like faced the situation where like, all right, well, maybe we're the Everton this year or the West Ham this year. And that might just be the reality, but like, It also might not be. And I think we have enough to say that once we push through this storm that we got going on, and once we figure out who our players are and like everyone's gelling together, like this team has a lot of potential to be something amazing. You know, we just need Pep Guardiola to leave. And then, you know, then I think we're good to go.
Yeah, I think a lot of good points, you know, said there, and then we kind of are in this like growing pains phase, and that, you know, we'll probably be on the better side of it long term. And short term, it might be some, you know, struggles in between. You know, so we do have the international break coming up. Our next match is against Arsenal. And I think it's a home match. Yeah, it is a home match against Arsenal on the 21st of October. So it's gonna be a really tough game. Obviously, we know how good that team has become over recent seasons. You know, what are your expectations heading into that match, and maybe what we see out of the squad in that match?
That's my game after the international break. I expect it to be a difficult one, not particularly because of the City game, because I think City are quite rubbish, but I don't think we are going to get pummeled. I think actually that it may be similar to the game we played against Liverpool, though Arsenal has a much better midfield than Liverpool does. I don't expect us to... We probably won't have as much control in the midfield as we did against Liverpool, but I expect that to... I mean, we played well against Fulham, we played well against Burnley, but Arsenal will be a whole different kettle of fish. I won't be surprised if we lose. I'll be very surprised if we lose by a very wide margin. But let's just say I expect it to be a difficult game, and I think we have enough to trouble Arsenal from time to time. I don't think we'll dominate the game. I think they probably beat us in possession. They also probably beat us in XG. But I expect us to put up a good fight, really. I think we've come a long way from last season, and last season we were quite toothless in many of these types of fixtures. So I'm not too worried about the game, but I recognize the kind of team Arsenal is, and I also recognize that if we are careless, it could become very ugly very quickly.
No, you're not wrong there. It's going to be one, the margin of error is very low.
Listen, I think Arsenal, the way they've won matches this season is actually not terribly dissimilar to how we've won matches in a weird way, which is they're defensively, they tell the opponent, the opposition, you can do one of two things. We're going to press really high, and you can try to beat that press. And if you do, we'll revert to a 4-4-2 mid block, and that'll be that. Like, that's fine. You could try that. Or you try going over the top of our press, but we're going to play with three center backs back there. I know one's Ben White, who's a fullback, but like, let's be real. Ben White's a center back, right? And they're going to be back there. They're not going to press, and they're big boys, and they're going to win those second balls. Which is weirdly not dissimilar to how we've won matches. I do think they will give Robert Sanchez problems. I also think we will give David Raya problems, again, for similar reasons. So to me, I actually think Arsenal and Chelsea, there's some differences with how they play in possession and with the roles of some players on the teams, but I don't think it's going to be a blowout. That this is the match where I would be surprised if it's a blowout. I really could see a draw, because I think we likely will get some good chances off of Raya being uncomposed with the ball at his feet. And I think they will get some chances off of Robert Sanchez being uncomposed with the ball at his feet. I think we are probably going to start, or Broya is at least going to get a lot of minutes, because he's the size of some of those big boys that Arsenal have and can try to win those second balls. I think we will do a lot of balls over the top. I think, like Ola, Arsenal probably win, but not only do I think we're going to give it a good fight, I think it will be such a good fight that only the worst Chelsea big Twitter accounts are going to be mad about the match. Otherwise, I think everybody will be pretty happy. So that they're not the match I'm worried about getting our butts kicked in. And I also, like, honestly, there's not a team other than maybe West Ham that I enjoy beating more, and it feels like it's been a long time since we've beaten Arsenal, so I would really like a win.
It feels like the last time, and now check me if I'm wrong, but like the last time we beat them in the league was like the match that Hazard made Coughlin turn into a helicopter on the field.
No, it was the match that Lukaku took the Arsenal defender and made him his son.
Yeah, and we had that one, and then you're right, we had the Tammy at the Emirates winner. That was like, right.
There's a few, refreshing but it my just memory, feels so rare. The last time it feels like we really obliterated them was that Hazard match.
And then before that, it was the 6-0 or 7-0 on Wenger's 1,000th match.
Yeah, that was great.
I distinctly remember my spot and situation for that match in 2014?
Yeah.
I think that was 2014.
That was Mourinho was manager, I think. And
It was my second year of college, yeah.
Yeah, and Mourinho had a whole little thing about why Arsene Wenger's obsessed with him. I love
that. I remember being dangerously hungover, so. But, all right, I'll let you guys get some of your thoughts in as well before we wrap up here for the Arsenal.
Yeah, I think Arsenal is an interesting one. Like Jordan said, I don't think they're going to obliterate us at all. One thing I've noticed with Arsenal this season, and it's a recurring thing as well, they seem to suffer from big emotional highs and then a big drop-off just afterwards. They've just beaten Manchester City. So they've got so they probably think they can beat anyone right now, right? So I'm hoping that they kind of bring that a little bit to our game, especially because we haven't been brilliant for a while. Right, there's something like people might see it as an easy game or easier than it actually is, and that might help us. I think us being underdogs helps us as well, especially with a young team. You don't want to put pressure on young players. Like, best thing to do is say like they're a really good team, like not demand, like not put insane expectations on them. Just set them up well tactically, pick the right team. And put in their best performance. Like, that's all we can do. Like, everyone giving in their best performance. If we do that, we have a chance of getting something from the game. Because Raya, he looked awful today. He was all over the place. And
Raya's a worse version of Kepa.
Yeah.
No, Ramsdale cost him a little bit at the end of last season, but
he's better than Raya. God damn.
Yeah, I really like Raya. I remember going on Twitter. I literally remember saying, because Raya was linked to us, and I said, I would rather have Robert fucking Sanchez than David Raya. And turns out I may have gotten my wish there. But like, David Raya was Brentford were so excited to move off of him. Like, this is a great, that's why he's out on loan. Right. It's not there's no obligation to buy on that loan. Brentford just wanted him out of the team.
Yeah.
Like, I really don't rate him.
It was also because of Arsenal's FFP thing as well. They couldn't sign anybody else. But they wanted to sign him permanently. But yeah. So, you know, I think we've got a chance of getting something from the game. If we do lose, it'll be a 1-0, like 2-1 kind of thing. I don't think we'll get thrashed at all. And I was going through some of the players that we've got. A lot of our squad have experience of beating Arsenal. You know, Levi Cole and Caicedo beat Arsenal 3-0 last season. And Caicedo owned Declan Rice when they played West Ham, like last season, as somebody told me today. Like, we've got a lot of players that have beaten Arsenal before, mainly with other clubs, but nevertheless, you know, and you've got to play Raheem Sterling in that game because of his experience and because he's just been man of the match as well. And he won't be with England, so he'll be rested. You'll have a lot of players that are rested. You know, Reece James isn't going to internationals, Raheem Sterling isn't, Badiashile won't be because he's only just coming back. I'm not sure if Desire got called up for France or not, did he? I don't know.
No, they didn't call him up this time.
No, they didn't call him up. So, like, you know, we know that Southgate's probably not going to play Levi Colwill because he's an idiot. So he might not. Hopefully he doesn't play much. You know, so we might. And Cole Palmer, he's done 21, so he'll be playing. I'm just trying to go through the team. Broyu is in with international, so he won't be. So we might have a fresher squad as well, which will help. And if you get the home crowd going, you never know what can happen. But I don't think it will be. I think it'll be a tight game. And if we're lucky, we might even nick a win. Which would be brilliant. But the problem with that is that our fans will start thinking we're title contenders if we beat Arsenal. So because we know what our fan base is like, right? So I'm confident we can get a good performance in that game and not gift them anything. This squad's mentality is good. I'm not expecting to win the game, but the only thing we get from the game is a bonus, but I'm not expecting to get heavily beaten at all. So yeah. But let's hope for the best. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that the match against Arsenal, I think really if we can pull a draw out of that match, that it should be a universal success with every Chelsea fan. Not just because of, you know, where we are at the table and where they are at the table, but a lot of the reasons that we've already hit upon in this podcast episode, which is how long they've been together, how much more embedded tactical understanding that squad has, how much better, you know, using a little bit of a term that I'm not a huge fan of, but like chemistry here, right? There are a lot of things that bode much more well for Arsenal in this match than that bode more well for Chelsea in this match. And that's okay, because that's being realistic with the plight of where we are as a club and where we are as a squad, right? But here's the key, and this is why I think it has to be said, that if Chelsea pick up a draw, look at what I just said, all of the time and continuity and this and that, stability, whatever, you know, what other superlatives you want to use for that Arsenal squad. If our young, inexperienced, new, fresh squad that struggled for results can get a result against that level of competition, not even a win, just a point. All we need is a point. That has to be an overwhelmingly positive sign to every Chelsea fan. I think everybody on this podcast would be okay with a point against one of the best teams in the Premier League right now, no doubt. A team that we haven't beaten in quite some time, also on the flip side. And I think if you're a Chelsea fan that's not okay with the thought of a draw against Arsenal, then it goes back to what Score was saying earlier. We have to be realistic. It goes back to what Travis was saying earlier. We have to be more realistic where we are as a stage. It goes back to, you know, what Ola said earlier, that we're going to have regression against bigger teams. It kind of is a theme that, you know, taking a draw should be a universal success of this entire episode for that next match against Arsenal. And I think if we get a draw against Arsenal, I'll be elated. I'll be super happy about that result, because it makes me know down deep, we can stand toe-to-toe with these big-ass teams. We can compete with them, and we can pick up points. We might not win, but we can pick up points. And that is going to be a huge thing for us in the short and, more importantly, in the long term. Because it's going to build buy-in and it's going to build confidence within the squad that we can get these results. We can grind this out. If we stick together and we continue to buy into the manager, maybe this time next year, we're the one beating. It's those kinds of moments that the psychology of it is why I think it's so important to get at least a point against Arsenal in this next match. It's something that's going to give us that psychology, that confidence, those things going forward. And those are things that I can't really tell you objectively, pinpoint what they are, but I can tell you there are many different objective pinpoints in terms of, you know, coaching or playing or whatever it might be that inherently build self-confidence, right? Repeating several actions successfully in a row is going to build more confidence than unsuccessfully completing the same actions in a row, right? It's just simple like that. It's like successful repetition, and getting a result against Arsenal in the next 2 weeks would be an example of small yet repetitive success, right? Or successive steps towards more success in our results. So I really do think we can get a point against Arsenal. I'm not going to go as far to say as we will get a point against Arsenal, but But I think that we can easily do it, and it would be a massive turning point for the rest of the season if we can. So that's kind of where I see the Arsenal match coming into. So I know we've went through a lot in this episode. I think we've actually had a lot of really good discussion in this episode. Oh, no, Travis Kelce. Oh, no, this looks bad. Sorry, that's just it's NFL Sunday for non-American listeners.
Are we sad about Taylor Swift right now? Is that something that's happening?
I guess, dude. He caught the ball and just like fell over. It didn't look. Oh, his ankle gave out. But sorry, it's just a.
It's gonna make a banger song, though. Let's be real.
Oh, it's gonna
did
be.
You guys hear the AI like three albums
once they're done, Travis?
Yeah. Did you hear the AI version of her song about how they got together and the breakup? And it sounds just like her.
I have not, but I'm very interested.
You should look it up. There's a guy that made like an AI album of Taylor Swift's breakup with Travis Kelce. Yeah. That hasn't even happened yet.
It's inevitable just because of their two lifestyles. But, anyway, sorry to derail this podcast. It's NFL Sunday. We all have it on the background, I'm sure. But, it's been a good episode here. And I think we've talked about, the positives, maybe some of the negatives, and maybe the more in between of this. And I think that's, that's the whole idea with this listening, experience as a viewer. I hope that that's what you're getting, is that there's a wide perspective of things offered, and we kind of always come somewhere in the middle with that. When you kind of put the collective together and whatnot and average it. So yeah, I think that, I would say I am cautiously optimistic after Burnley, because the first half was not too great. The second half showed a lot of what I wanted to see. And however the goals are scored is good enough with me right now. I don't care if it takes five more Sterling own goals to win 1-0 every match. I do not care at this point, because nobody at the end of the year is going to ask, how'd you score the goals? They're just going to say, how many points did you get? Right. That's how we're ultimately going to be judged. I don't care how pretty or ugly it is anymore. Burnley had its ugly moments. It had its pretty moments. Let's hopefully that can, just kind of leverage out. But yeah, I think this is the more three straight wins. This is the most optimistic I've been in a little bit for this club, especially the young core we're working with and the new management with the Pochettino era. So we'll see, guys. I am looking forward to this next match and looking forward to get back to you. And for other listeners, we do have a break coming up, and I'm going to try to finish out our history series as best we can, at least get more of it continued during this international break. So that should be something that we move towards here the next week or so. But yeah, guys, thanks a lot for hopping on with me. It's good to have the full crew back for once. It's been a long time. I know it's been a lot of stuff going on, but it's good to have everybody back and get everybody's opinions on it. But yeah, I'll let you all get back to the rest of your Sunday. Thanks again. And for all listeners, we really appreciate the support. And thanks for listening. And until the next time, keep the blue flag flying high.